Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators are taking on the St. Louis Blues tonight. Big ol' game for the Predators tonight. Seven games left in the regular season. And joining us now to break down the game tonight, looking ahead to the playoffs, is our friend Elliot Friedman from the 32 Thoughts podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh. What do I do now?
Bring in the heat.
The Predators were on an 18-game point streak. They were riding high. They were feeling great. They were playing like one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. And yeah, as soon as we talked with you last week, they went out and had a clunker at Arizona, and they haven't won since.
I blame that on you. Responsibility. I accept responsibility for
damn
this.
Damn you, Elliot.
I hang my head in shame.
I at least appreciate you accepting that responsibility, exactly. But we're going to have to turn things around here tonight against the St. Louis Blues. Elliot, we've had some very nervous and worried and concerned Predators fans that over the last three games, you know, a clunker at Arizona, and then they look great against Colorado, but they end up falling 7-4 to Colorado, give up 15 goals in a two-game streak, 18 goals in a three-game streak. We have some very concerned Predators fans. But I want to hear it from you. Should Predators fans be concerned about the Predators making the playoffs and the Predators' ability to be competitive in the playoffs?
Well, when Nick, the producer, called me and said there were Predators fans worried they might not make the playoffs, I said, really? Like, people are really worried about that? And he said, oh, yes, there are people worried. And I guess it doesn't take a lot, Carolyn, after riding the wave of 18 in a row with at least a point and no regulation losses, to three losses in a row and people are worried. I wouldn't be that worried. Now, obviously, look, like you have a streak like that one, mm-hmm. The pendulum is going to swing the other way. It's just sports. That's the way it is. You're going through that right now. And this is a huge game tonight. The one thing that you guys have control over is to beat the team that you have to beat. And tonight, this is a huge one for you. But I still really like your chances. Look, you're 6 points up. You've got the same games played. This will be game number 76 for both of you. Also, the other thing you have to realize is the number one tiebreaker is regulation wins. Coming into tonight, the Predators have 35. The Blues have 29. Mm-hmm. It's like they have to beat you outright. I just find it really hard to believe that the Predators, as well as they've played the last 2 months, 3 months, are going to get into such a situation that they're going to blow a 6-point lead with seven games to go. I could always be wrong, but I believe too much in what they've done to think that that's going to occur.
I think a lot of Predators fans might be breathing at least a little bit of a sigh of relief. Sometimes you get spoiled on an 18-game point streak that a couple of losses here and there feel like the world is ending. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts and Sportsnet, is with us. Elliot, when you look at this Predators team and you evaluate them and the streak that they went on, and even though they've lost the last three games, they looked pretty good while doing it. If you could say that there's one advantage that this Predators team has going into the playoffs, maybe one reason that could push them to the second round of the playoffs, what do you think it would be?
Well, the most important thing in the playoffs is goaltending. You get the saves when it matters, and you guys have a great goalie. So that's number one. Number two, I think that you guys have proven there's a certain way that Andrew Burnett wants you to play, and you guys have done a really good job of doing that. And, you know, if you trust what you do, like, the most important thing in a playoff series is things are going to go wrong. It's a best of seven. There's very rare that there's sweeps. It's normally much more than that. So when things go wrong for you, how calm are you, and how much do you trust the way you're supposed to play, the way that you played all year? Do you get back to that? Do you fall back to that way of playing, or do you completely fall apart and start doing things you're not supposed to do? It's pretty clear to me that the Predators trust the way they've been asked to play, and nobody's done a better job of leading the way than Yossi. Like, he's completely changed the way he, well, I shouldn't say completely, but he's changed a lot of the way that he was asked to play. And it's worked. And I think when people see the captain buying in, they buy in. So number one, I would say, is the goalie. Number two is the trust in what they do. I mean, a lot of it comes down to matchup. Like right now, it looks like the 1-2 seeds are going to be Dallas and Vancouver. You know, the one thing I don't like if it's Dallas, to me, Dallas is the deepest team in the league. From 1 to 20, I think they're the deepest. I think that's a really tough matchup for anyone. Their goalie, Jake Oettinger, hadn't been very good for a lot of this year. He started to heat up. That's going to be a big challenge. And I don't think anyone's going to want to see them in the first round if the goalies are.
We'll talk with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot, with that being said, amongst the teams that we predict that will make the playoffs, where does the Nashville Predators rank in regards to depth? Because that's what is going to it's going to boil down to: how deep can this Predator team go compared to, say, like a Dallas or a Colorado? Because these are the teams they're going to have to match up with in the first
round.
Well,
you know, they're going to be an underdog in whatever series they go up against. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you look at the standings, it could always happen. You know, it's almost like pick your poison, right, Derek? Like, if you catch Winnipeg, you're playing Colorado. Well, that's not a lot of fun. If you finish first or second wild card, and right now you guys are wild card one, you're getting Dallas and Vancouver. That's not a lot of fun. So no matter what series that you're going to play, you're going to be the underdog. Like, that's just the way it is. The other team is going to be the favorite against you. Now, I think you guys have proven this week you're a lot deeper, or this year, you're a lot deeper than we thought and a lot better than we thought. And the other thing, too, is, Derek, I really believe this, and I'm sure you've played on teams like this before. You get to the playoffs and it's like house money. You're like, we did not think we were going to be here this year. Like, this is a complete surprise. Like, I guarantee you, if the Predators get in, Andrew Burnett's going to tell them, guys, at the beginning of the year, no one thought we were going to be here. So make sure you enjoy the experience. And sometimes when you are able to play like that, you can play freer. If they weren't going to make the playoffs, it would be a huge disappointment for the Predators and their fans, and I think they're going to make it anyway. But if you, like, how many people who are Predators fans really thought there would be home games in the second or third week of April this year? I bet not very many. And so now you're going to get the opportunity to do it. You're going to put that car out front that you're going to smash with sledgehammers with a Canucks or an Avalanche or a Stars logo on it, and you're going to have a great time. So you're going to be playing a team that has no pressure, and that's you guys. And I think that can be a great thing for a team.
Now, what does it say? Because Barry came on the other day with Jared, and Jared asked him a question: is there a team you'd rather play? And he said, yeah, but he didn't give the team's name out. Typically, you don't see that from coaches, players, and you damn sure don't hear that from GMs.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Does it take sort of – by him saying something like that, does it take pressure off anyone, or does it add pressure to anyone
that there's a team that they'd like to play against?
Yeah, but he's not going to say it, but he did.
Well,
I think it would
only add pressure if Barry came out and said, give me Vancouver.
Bulletin board material.
Vancouver, we're beating them in five. Yeah, like, then you've got a problem. Or give me Dallas or something like that.
Because you typically don't hear this or see this from GM, from coaches, let alone GM.
Open book,
well,
Barry.
Well, you know what? This is the thing. Like, the one thing, like, I listen to Barry's segments on your station, mm-hmm. and the thing that I really respect from on this is, it's like, he gets it. Like, when he's on your station, he's talking to your fans. Like, he's talking to you guys, but he's talking to your fans. And it's very obvious he sees the importance of doing it. So he tries to give a little bit more without giving away anything. And that's what that is. Like Barry's watching this as a coach. He's looking at, he's looking at Vancouver. He's looking at Colorado. He's looking at Dallas. And he's saying, this is what we would look like against them, or this is what we'd. So I sure think that he would look at it and say, I think we've got a better chance against X team than Y or Z. But no, Derek, he's not going to tell you what it is. You know, it's funny, there are people in the hockey world, it's mostly fans. I don't know many executives who agree with this. My coworker on the podcast, Jeff Merrick, wants it really badly. He wants a playoff system where the number one seed has to pick their opponent. And I said, Jeff, that's never going to happen. Who knows? Maybe it does happen someday. But there's could you imagine Barry Trotz, Nashville wins the number one seed, walking up to a microphone and say, we're in the first round, we're going to take the St. Louis Blues. He would want no part of that. None. Zero.
Drama. Elliot Friedman is with us. Speaking of drama, Elliot, quite the race in the East right now. You said you love races. Well, you got it with the five teams for two spots. And now Pittsburgh still has a shot, which a couple weeks ago people stopped talking about them other than what a disaster of a season. Now they've got a chance. And the Predators play at the Islanders on Saturday, and they finish the season on Monday. It's not the Penguins' last game. It's their second to last game, but they're in Pittsburgh. So they're going to play a small role in this one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh is, it's true. We thought they were dead. We thought they were completely finished. And, I just think it's just a reminder that you can never count that guy out. And, there's a big debate now. We also have to start going over who we're voting for awards. The ballots have to be in before the first playoff game. And, if Crosby gets the Penguins into the playoffs, he's going to get a lot of MVP votes. First of all, he's really led. And it's just a reminder what an incredible professional that he is. Nobody would have blamed him if he had just said, that's it, we're done. But he's just driving. I cannot believe. On one hand, it's a credit to him. And on the other hand, it's a real shot at some of the other teams that had a chance to bury the Penguins, and they didn't do it. And now they're in the race. There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on this game tonight. And I'll say this, if Pittsburgh wins, if Pittsburgh gets in the playoffs, he might be the MVP too. It would be that stunning.
Wow.
I cannot disagree. It's interesting. We were talking about could it unravel so much that you would even have to, if you're Sidney Crosby and the Penguins mutually deciding, well, maybe it's time to trade the legend. As crazy as that would sound, but now, he keeps you around. That so the drama could be there. And meanwhile, the Islanders, maybe give us a sense of where the Islanders are, because they look maybe dead in the water a week and a half ago, and they've surged a little bit to get back in it.
Well, I think the thing, Willie, I know you listen to the pod. I'm a big expanded playoff guy. I think they should.
This is another thing. So this is where Merrick gets back at you. He says you're crazy for wanting to expand the playoffs.
Well, I do want to do it because I think it's better for the overall financial health, of the league. And I think it creates more interest. More playoffs create more interest. And also, and you would probably know this as much as anything else too, this is a gate-driven league. This is a league that depends more on gates than just about any other league out there. And why would you create a situation where less of your teams would have interest in them? If you don't make the playoffs, then your season tickets goes down, your interest goes down, your TV ratings goes down, everything goes down. So why aren't we creating the best environment to maximize the salary cap? That's my point. Anyway, one of the reasons that people are disagreeing with me over this, and I get it, they're not wrong, is that some of these teams this year, it's been like a turtle derby. Right.
You're saying, that, and the argument is, why should they really have a chance to play for the Cup? Because they haven't been like a great team.
Like, if you take a look at it, Philly, and those are a lot of kids there, like, they're coming back to earth and they've opened up the race a bit. But Washington, their goal differential is minus 35. That could be the worst goal differential to make the playoffs in the salary cap era. But they're there. Detroit, they haven't been able to knock it down. The Islanders haven't been able to knock it down. Like, all these teams who've had chance to end each other's chances, they haven't been able to do it. So it's tough to I mean, you have to praise Pittsburgh because they came from nowhere to get back in. But all those other teams, you can't really praise them because all they've done, like, all these teams had chance to knock each other out, to say, all right, you're done. But they can't do it. So you can't praise anybody.
Last one for you, Elliot. I have learned about myself that I don't like change very much, so I'm trying to embrace it. And one thing that I've embraced is expanded playoffs. College football did it, and I like the idea of an expanded NHL playoff because I'll take more games that mean something. So I'm with you. I'm pro-expansion, but how realistic of a possibility do you think that is, and what would that timeline look like?
Well, I'll say this. I have fought for it for years, and the commissioner hates it. He just hates it. And there have been people who have tried to get him to change his mind, and he doesn't. He thinks it's terrible. He thinks that the regular season matters. And last year, too, Carolyn, the two teams that missed the playoffs in the East missed by like 20 points. So he's like, look at that. You think those teams deserve to be in the playoffs? However, all of that said, I do think we're not far from expansion. And right now, half the teams get in, 16 of 32. And I've got to think if you do expand, you're going to be looking at expansion of playoffs. I just don't think they'll go to a place where less than 50% of teams can make the playoffs.
Elliot Friedman, you are the very best. Appreciate your time and always appreciate your insight. And we'll catch up with you next week, hoping that this visit with you this week turns the Preds' bad fortune around.
Okay, because I don't need another week of feeling shame, so I really hope so, too.
And we will do what we have to do, Elliot. We, you know, it's not fun to do, but we have to do
we
it.
We shame you.
Yeah, okay, I look forward to it. I'm a glutton for punishment.
I appreciate you,
like
Elliot.
The goalie in Slapshot. Two minutes, feel shame.
All right, appreciate you, Elliot. Thanks for stopping by. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast in Sportsnet. We'll react to what Elliot had to say there. Plus, we've got a bunch of thoughts in our text line in our conversation earlier. In a recent mock draft from Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, Malik Nabers on the board at 7, but he has the Titans going Joe Alt. Would you be able to stomach it if the Titans forego Malik Nabers and take the offensive lineman? We'll get into your thoughts on that as well. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits today as the Nashville Sounds take on the St. Paul Saints at First Horizon Park. Pre-game at 6:20 p.m. First pitch at 6:35. With coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3classichits.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, which today is Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Big game for the Predators tonight, hosting the St. Louis Blues. A great opportunity for the Preds to get a win tonight and create that four-point separation between themselves and the Blues. 2 points that they would get and 0 points that the Blues would get. We've got a bunch of thoughts in our text line on everything, and everything is on the table. We talked earlier in the show about Bruce Feldman's most recent mock draft. He has the Titans going Joe Alt, even though Malik Nabers was on the board. Do you think that's the right move? Every single mock draft has the Titans taking Joe Alt. If that's how it shakes out, how would you feel about it? And, of course, we just chatted with Elliot Friedman on the Predators. So let's get into your thoughts, unless we have thoughts.
Let's go to the phones.
Let's get to the phones. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Terrell Texan asks, how do the Titans address inside linebacker and safety? Rand Carthon did mention when L'Jarius Sneed was introduced, Rand Carthon spoke with the media, and he did mention how there's several safeties on the market that they'll probably address in this next wave of free agency. Justin Simmons is on the market, I believe.
Yes,
he's on the market.
He's still on the market, yes.
So they've got some options at safety. I feel like that's not a position that they would necessarily have to address in the draft. But inside linebacker, that's a big one. You don't have a green dot at the moment.
Yeah, you don't. And can you find one via the draft, one you can, you know, plug and play? You know, I don't know. There could be an inside backer that you can draft, not in the first round, but outside of the first round that can come in and, you know, be that green dot guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you don't, then you got to do it via free agency, whether that's after the draft in June, or it could possibly be during camp where they get that guy. So it's, to me, you have to get him, but where do you get him? Or it could just be a short-term fix. You get a free agent guy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be an all-pro or pro bowler, but a solid middle backer, a guy that is used to communicating, a guy that can communicate across the board with everybody on the defensive side of the ball, a guy that knows the plays, that knows the calls. Again, he doesn't have to be a all-pro player. He just needs to be a good communicator and make sure he's a general. That's basically what he is.
The quarterback of the defense.
Exactly. Make sure everybody is where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there.
And Rand Carthon did mention it doesn't have to be linebacker. It doesn't have to be an inside backer.
It doesn't, but it's hard when it's outside that backer because they see the field different.
Like, it can't just be Jeffrey Simmons.
Exactly.
Like, he doesn't see the entire
field. He has his hands on the ground all the time. You know, it's hard for him to do it.
If not a middle backer, who do you think it could be?
It could be safety.
A safety?
I see that as being the only other guy.
But it can't be a corner. It
can't be a corner. I don't know the last time a corner had a green dot. Usually it's the inside backer or possibly the safety, you know. So outside of an inside backer and a safety, I don't think you can put – I mean, you can, but they just see everybody else sees the field differently from the safety and the linebacker.
I'm a little depressed.
Uh-huh.
D-Mace's Tigers have come back to tie the Mets. The Mets had their first lead of the season, and now they have their first squandered lead of the season. It's 3-3 in the bottom of the eighth.
Damn Mets!
The Tigers are trying to go 162-0 on the season.
Hey, so we got a chance to do it, huh?
you still got a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Exactly, so...
What else do the people have to say, Caroline?
All right, looking through the text line, one texter texts in about Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, because we played a clip of Paul Kuharsky on with Robbie and Joe,
yes.
And he said, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine has an explosive. And he says, Dylan says, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. I'm still refining.
Work in progress.
We're still working on
that. That was better than
I like it, though. I like it, yeah.
Thank you. It's better than Joe's.
Yes.
If you've ever heard Joe try to do a Paul Kowalski. He's a little bit too Jersey Italian.
Exactly.
Dylan says, NWI has been productive and healthy, which is more than I can say for any receiver or the Titans have had the past 3 or 4 years. Aside from Hopkins, the man doesn't complain. He just gets to work and absolutely love him. That's all true, and that's all fine and great, but still, there's a ceiling with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. It's like Rudy. Rudy wasn't the best player on the team, but he had heart.
Yeah. You can't coach heart, so there you go. Everybody has it, but what you choose to do with it is it's a different story, or how you choose to love or whatever else. But I've said this before about Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Is he your top line number one? No. Is he your number two? No. Can he come in and probably give you a few plays at number two? Yeah, he can do that. But every team needs a Nick Westbrook-Ikhine on it. They do. Mm-hmm. Because what he does as the third or the fourth, whichever one you're going to put him at, what guys like that do, they don't get a lot of fanfare. But when you don't have them, you miss them. Because what he is able to do is, no matter whether it was Ryan Tannehill or whether it was Will Levis, I can't say Malik because Malik didn't hit nobody. But let's say those two quarterbacks. he has been where he was supposed to be when he was supposed to be there, and he made the plays for the Tennessee Titans when they have asked him to do it. They haven't asked him to make many plays, but the plays they have asked, whether it's a crucial first down or a crucial touchdown, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine has been there. Again, he's not a one or a two, but you need a guy like that on your team, because when you don't have a guy like that on your team, you tend to miss him, and then everybody's screaming, why y'all didn't keep Nick Westbrook-Ikhine? This is why they're keeping him, for reasons like this. Like, listen, they don't expect him to have 90 catches, 1,400 yards, and 10 touchdowns. They expect him to make crucial catches in game when they ask him to. And that's all he's done since he's been the Tennessee Titan.
But game on the line, whose hands do I want the ball in? Not Nick Westbrook.
No, it's not that I want him.
But I understand your point. You're not going to have a 53-man roster of Pro Bowlers.
But again, if the game's on the line and for some strange reason, D-Hop falls down, Calvin Ridley's doubled, Treylon Burks get jammed at the line, you run a four wide receiver set, I'm glad I got a Nick Westbrook-Ikhine now. Because you don't have three defense. You don't have three. Damn sure don't have four defensive backs that can cover my four receivers. So I'm glad I got a Nick Westbrook-Ikhine on my team. Because I know for sure Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is going to beat your third corner and your fourth corner.
If it comes to...
I like having him at the right price. I mean, that's, he's a nice guy to have on your team at the right price.
Yeah.
Westbrook-Ikhine is not explosive. Repeat those words.
I never said he was.
Well, let's say it. Let's get it on the record. No, you're not saying he's explosive.
I'm not Bart Simpson, the chalkboard for you. I'm not your
Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Is he explosive?
No. I never said he was.
Mark that on tape, Nick.
It's not explosive.
Well, he's not.
Who argued that he was explosive? Nobody in Nashville has ever said he's explosive, have they?
I've never said he was explosive. I said he's a good player. I never said he was explosive.
How did we get there? I don't. This is out of context because I hear this argument. I'm like, who's arguing for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine being explosive?
Well, I guess he's steady. Yeah, the premise.
He is who he is.
The point was.
Are they in dire need of a receiver, or do they just we'll get one if they're there?
The point was, it's not like you go out and get Calvin Ridley, and all of a sudden the passing game is untouchable, unstoppable, and can't even be improved.
Because you signed Nick Westbrook-Ikhine back.
Right, yes, because you brought in Calvin Ridley.
None of that has to do with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, the player.
He's the same guy he's always been. He's always been this player. I mean, he's gotten better, but this is what you expect from him, like. You know, 35 catches, 300-400 yards, somewhere around there. I don't know.
He's reliable. Exactly. And you need that.
Poor NWI. The guy gets pulled into this thing.
He doesn't, like, gosh.
It's not about him.
That man's just like, I'm just playing football.
I'm just trying to do my job here.
Exactly.
Doug in Franklin, Texas says, if Joe Alt is available at number 7, the Titans will take him. The question becomes, if he goes to the Chargers at pick number, he's a 6-5, what is the strategy now for the Titans at 7? Is there a high enough rated left tackle remaining that you take him there? Do you feel one of your other needs or do you trade down? That's the question of... Is there another tackle that's available that you think is worthy of the 7th overall pick? Like, is Olafashnu or J.C. Latham or any of these other tackles that are graded as first-round tackles, are they top 10 pick tackles? But if Joe Alt goes to at 5 to the Chargers, well, that means that another receiver is there, a Brock Bowers is there. Do you go that route?
No, I'm trading down.
And that's also an option.
Yeah, I'm trading down because my thing is this. If Alt's not there... then obviously there are other left tackles there that I can potentially draft, but I don't want to draft those other guys at 7. So, yeah, Neighbors may be there. Adunze may be there. Who want to come up and get him? I can stay here and pick one of them, but who want to come up and get him?
If you have a trade partner.
Exactly. Who wants to come up and get him? And I can move down and still get the left tackle that I need, because there's no question. I need a left tackle.
Yeah.
A receiver is a luxury because I have receivers on my team. Now, one of them needs to prove itself, but the other two have proven themselves in this league. I have receivers. That would be a luxury pick if I got them at 7. Who wants to come up and get their receiver? But you know what you got to give up to get up to this number 7 spot. So if I'm the Titans and Alt's not there, either you take the tackle you had rated right behind Oat at seven and say, hey, listen, this was our contingency plan. If he wasn't there, we're going to take this guy, but we're staying at seven. Mm-hmm. Either you could do that or you move back far enough where you still can get your tackle if you want it, or you can get a receiver that you want. Mm-hmm. But you're gaining picks because you're moving back a few spots.
Opie has a question for Willie.
Ooh.
Says, Willie, give your thoughts on the Devils-Rangers line brawl last night. Interested in Laviolette's role in causing it. Laviolette the Potster?
It's a good question. I didn't watch. I heard all about it, and I knew about the buildup because what happened, this goes back with some bad blood that happened the last time the Rangers and Devils, who are rivals to begin with, right? They hate each other and have for ever since the Devils came into the league in the early 80s. But and the Devils have always been that pesky little brother. The Rangers are the original six, and they've got a huge fan base. And the Devils like, oh, this is your little New Jersey operation over here. What are you guys doing, you know? But the Devils have won cups, right? And they've beaten the Rangers in some big series. In 94, the Rangers beat the Devils in a dramatic Eastern Conference final, finally won the Stanley Cup for the first time since, I forget when, the last 1940s or something like that. So there's a great history there. Uh-huh. But what happened the last time they played is this guy, Rempe, big 6'5", 6'6", giant, came in. He was fighting people. He was hitting people. He's a Laviolette kind of guy. He loves Laviolette, loves energy like that.
He was a goon.
Kind of a goon who could play just well enough in today's NHL to, you know, stay out on the ice and help you enough. But he was definitely stirring the pot. So it's one thing to fight a guy. It's another thing. He had a cheap shot, bad hit, knocked a guy out of the game who was not a fighter. Mm-hmm. And then the fighter for the Devils, they took issue. He wouldn't fight. So the Devils were like, next time we play, Rempe, you're going to answer for this. Uh-huh. We're going to go. We're going to deliver our statement. And so what happened? It was the very first play of the game. And it was we had a melee.
Everybody
a little bit of old school. They're trying to weed that out. It doesn't happen as much as it used to. Terry Crispus got story after story about his era in the 70s. Oh, my goodness. There was stuff like that all the time.
We walked into the arena, we started fighting, and then we grabbed a cigarette.
It's crazy. So that was a little old school.
It was wild to see. All right, it is, I think, one of the best betting weekends of the sports calendar. Final Four on both the men's and the women's side. Our friend Allie Melnicki will join us coming up next, giving her best bets of the week. And we'll do that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. It is the Caroline and Willie Bowl this weekend. So tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as Vanderbilt baseball takes on LSU.
Down to the bayou.
Down in Baton Rouge with the pregame at 5:45 p.m. and first pitch at 6. Vanderbilt baseball brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. Caroline Willie D. Mace live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Big game for the Predators tonight. Blues at Preds. Joining us now to give us her best bets of the weekend is our friend Allie Melnicki from Zen Sports. Allie, we've got a Preds game tonight, but I'm going to look ahead to the final four games this weekend, both on the men's and women's side. Alabama taking on UConn. I know we got a lot of Crimson Tide fans here in our market, but I don't know who can beat UConn. Who are you taking in that matchup?
I think the safe bet is to go with the over. It's sitting at 161.5 right now. These are teams that love to score. They put up big points. I know that's a very high number, but I can easily see both teams getting in the 80s, maybe even the 90s. 11 points is a lot of points to lay with UConn over Alabama, but I think the safe bet is to take the over.
I would agree with you. I know at least on the Alabama side, sometimes they're allergic to defense every once in a while.
They like the math. Mm-hmm. Just get those shots up. Shoot those threes.
Lob up a three and hope for the best. Looking at the women's side, I know projecting in the Final Four of who is ultimately going to win a championship, it could go any which way. But it seems like South Carolina could be as safe of a bet to win the national championship as any. Who are you thinking on the women's side of things?
I mean, I'm going to ride the Caitlin Clark train. We haven't seen a player like her in years. That was an electric game the other night against LSU. So I know Iowa going up against South Carolina maybe will be a little bit tough on Iowa's end, but I think I'm going to ride Caitlin Clark. She's playing phenomenal. She put up, what, 40-something points the other day over LSU. I'm going to go with Iowa.
You bring up the LSU-Iowa game. It was released. 12.3 million viewers. It shattered the records for the most watched women's college basketball game of all time. I don't know if this is a prop bet on the Zen Sportsbook app or not, but if you had to bet more viewers or fewer viewers for a potential Iowa and South Carolina national championship, what would you take, over or under 12.3 million?
Over for sure. I think everyone's going to want to tune in to see if Caitlin Clark can finally take down that net and get herself a championship. I know it's a very big number, but I'll definitely be tuning in. And I do think, even though Angel Reese won't be there with that rivalry, I think it would surpass that number.
Always must see TV.
We'll talk with Allie Melnicki, Zen Sports. Now, Allie, now that Joel Embiid has come back, has the odds for Philadelphia, the 76ers, have they changed in regards to them making it to the NBA Finals?
Not too much. You know, we still don't know how healthy Embiid is. He does have a very big injury history. I would be surprised if they get all the way there. Also, he did just come back, so it's going to take him some time to get back into his groove. I just think that the Celtics in that are just the Thunder, if you look at those two, some of the best teams in the league, and put in the Nuggets, the defending champions, I think it's going to be tough to beat any of those three teams. So I would rather back one of those three.
Now, is all the money going on the Nuggets to repeat as champions this year?
Mostly at the beginning of the year, but people are jumping on the Boston Celtics because they just have looked invincible as of late. I mean, behind Jason Tatum and Kristaps Porzingis, that's just a crazy good team. So we've been seeing a lot of action coming in on the Celtics as of late. And some people like the dark horses. You know, they're looking at the Knicks to make some noise. I know there's a lot of Knicks fans that travel out of New York, so that's another dark horse people have been looking at.
Yeah, that Boston team, they're just loaded from top to bottom. They do, to me, they do have the best team, you know, when you talk about starting five and then them going to their bench. So I can see why they would be the favorites considering how they've been playing.
Yeah, for sure. They've just been phenomenal. But, you know, Nuggets are defending champs. They have the same makeup with, obviously, Jokic and Murray, Porter, so it's going to be hard for to discount them to repeat.
Allie, I'm keeping an eye on the Mets Tigers game right now, 3-3 in the ninth. The Mets working on an 0-162 season right now. What are the odds that they could actually win a game at some point, anytime? Are you a Mets fan? I'm a Mets fan. I don't know. I know you're a Giants, but are you Yankees or Mets?
I'm actually a Boston Red Sox fan. I know that goes against
the okay. So you're a little crossed up. The Sox are playing well, huh?
Yeah, 5-2. I know we just played the A's, so I don't know how much that speaks those wins, but I don't know if that team will have more than a handful of wins this year.
They're also not going to have a handful of fans. They are now announcing that they're going to play in Sacramento for the next 3 years. That's like a real-life Major League situation.
Yeah, Oakland is tough. They lost their Raiders, and now they're about to lose their Athletics. So it's been tough up there for them.
Bummer.
T's and P's to the city of Oakland. Allie, appreciate you as always. Thanks for your insight, and we'll catch up with you next Thursday.
Thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Allie Melnicki, our friend from Zen Sports, that is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. reacting to Predators Blues tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pregame coverage at 6 p.m. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.